Welcome back to the Hemingway List, the podcast where we do things the Hemingway. On today's episode, we will be discussing The Brothers Karamazov, Book 8, Chapter 5, Part 1. The questions I asked you guys. Mitya does seem rather manic now, blowing money impulsively. It's a very mania thing. Thoughts? And the second question, will young Misha make of all this? I meant to write, what will young Misha make of all this? My apologies for that. Okay, I Am Norwegian said yes. I did read one of those character lists that spoil the plot, thinking that they would only mention who they were vaguely. I don't really mind, it's not like the provincial writer has been subtle about the fact that someone is going to die. That's continuing on from yesterday's conversation where you said it had been spoiled by a character breakdown. That sucks, man. That sucks, but I'm glad it hasn't bothered you too much. Hey, I managed to stop where I was supposed to for once. Nicely done. Regarding question one about Mitya being manic, honestly, says I Am Norwegian, I have no idea what Mitya is up to. He seems to have a plan, but I don't know what it is. Walking around in a daze like he did is a very post-murdery thing to do. Post-murdery. I'm not sure what he's doing with the guns. Is it part of some new plan that will solve everything? Or is he intending to shoot himself? He did say to Alyosha that however bad things got, he could always just kill himself. Or is he intending to throw one last party before he has to confront the consequences of whatever he's done? He has the 3,000 rubles from Fyodor's letter to Grishenka. Did Dmitri kill both Grigory and Fyodor? I have no idea what he's thinking or planning. Shrugging smiley face emoji. Yeah, I'm a bit confused at the moment. I think this bit's meant to be vague, intentionally vague. We're not really sure what he's done. We're not sure what he's thinking, what he's doing. Laura Weistich said, "Ha, it was easy to remember the line, where to stop today. Where to stop today, the line was, and beginning to help him off with his coat, he cried out again, look, your coat's covered with blood too." Techrific said, "I have kind of lost the plot here, both literally and figuratively. Is Mitya contemplating suicide or a duel? Who is Fenya? Is she Grishenka's servant? I'm starting to understand how Anne's been feeling." Starting to. I'm sure I've been way more confused than you've been, Tech. You've seemed to be keeping up pretty well. I usually don't spend so little reading time on one book, and I'm not sure if Karamazov really benefits from this slow reading, maybe for the philosophical religious parts, but not for these more plot-driven parts. I'm also reading other books at the same time. Maybe that's adding to my difficulty, I don't know. Yeah, this chapter was a funny one. It was 15 pages long, which is a little bit on the longer side. But it's not one that's really bogged down with long rants or anything like that. It was kind of a bit of a fast-moving one. So it felt like I should have kept reading, but last night I just wasn't able to. I had to do the podcast pretty late last night. It was something like 2 o'clock in the morning. So I just wasn't able to do the whole chapter. Plus it was long. It was 15 pages long. I'm with you on that one. Like, it probably isn't the sort of chapter that you would stop reading halfway through. But hey, doesn't matter. Swim said, "The Mama Fishy said, yes, Fenya is Grishenka's servant. I'm feeling the slow pace with you. I've read ahead on Les Miserables for just this reason. Then, if one comments, you have to be careful not to spoil. Part of it is also maybe the previous Hemingway titles were shorter and thus quicker reads. And if we are really bold, we can liken our slow pace to Purgatory." Purgatory indeed, says Techrific. Swim said, "The Mama Fishy also said, I would describe Dmitri as fanatical, filled with excessive and single-minded zeal." Single-minded, would you say? I think he's quite scatterbrained. I mean, I know he is obsessing and fanatical about Grushenko and about that whole thing, but it's also making him be quite erratic in different ways. He's not sane, though, is he? He's having some kind of an episode. He's got to be. Very much seems that way. Anyway, let's continue reading this chapter. Part 2 of Book 8, Chapter 5 goes like this. Look, your coat's covered with blood too. That, it's not the coat. It's only a little here on the sleeve. And that's only here where the handkerchief lay. It must have soaked through. I must have sat on the handkerchief at Fenya's and the blood's come through, Mitya explained once with a childlike unconsciousness that was astounding. Peter Ilyich listened, frowning. Well, you must have been up to something. You must have been fighting with someone, he muttered. They began to wash. Peter Ilyich held the jug and poured out the water. Mitya, in desperate haste, scarcely soaped his hands. They were trembling, and Peter Ilyich remembered it afterwards. But the young official insisted on his soaping them thoroughly and rubbing them more. He seemed to exercise more and more sway over Mitya as time went on. It may be noted in passing that he was a young man, of sturdy character. Look, you haven't got your nails clean. Now rub your face, here, on your temples, by your ear. Will you go in that shirt? Where are you going? Look, all the cuff of your right sleeve is covered with blood. Yes, it's all bloody, observed Mitya, looking at the cuff of his shirt. Then change your shirt. I haven't time. You see, Mitya went on with the same confiding ingenuousness, drying his face and hands on the towel and putting on his coat. I'll turn it up at the wrist. It won't be seen under the coat, you see. Tell me now, what game have you been up to? Have you been fighting with someone in the tavern again, as before? Have you been beating that captain again? Peter Ilyich asked him reproachfully. Whom have you been beating now? Or killing, perhaps? Nonsense, said Mitya. Don't worry, said Mitya, and he suddenly laughed. I smashed an old woman in the marketplace just now. Smashed? An old woman? An old man, cried Mitya, looking Peter Ilyich straight in the face, laughing and shouting at him as though he were deaf. Confounded, an old woman, an old man, have you killed someone? We made it up. We had a row and made it up. In a place I know of, we parted friends. A fool. He's forgiven me. He's sure to have forgiven me by now. If he had got up, he wouldn't have forgiven me. Mitya suddenly winked. Only damn him, you know, I say, Peter Ilyich, damn him. Don't worry about him. I don't want to, just now. Mitya snapped out resolutely. Whatever do you want to go picking quarrels with everyone for? Just as you did with that captain over some nonsense. You've been fighting and now you're rushing off on the spree. That's you all over. 3 dozen champagne. What do you want all that for? Bravo. Now give me the pistols. Upon my honour, I've no time now. I should like to have a chat with you, my dear boy, but I haven't the time, and there's no need. It's too late for talking. Where's my money? Where have I put it? He cried, thrusting his hands into his pockets. You put it on the table yourself. Here it is. Had you forgotten? Money's like dirt or water to you, it seems. Here are your pistols. It's an odd thing. At 6 o'clock you pledged them for 10 rubles, and now you've got thousands. 2 or 3, I would say. 3, you bet, laughed Mitya, stuffing the notes into the side pocket of his trousers. You'll lose it like that. Have you found a gold mine? The mines, Mitya shouted at the top of his voice and went off into a roar of laughter. Would you like to go to the mines, Per Houghton? There's a lady here who'll stump up 3,000 for you, if only you'll go. She did it for me. She's so awfully fond of gold mines. Do you know Madame Holokov? I don't know her, but I've heard of her and seen her. Did she really give you 3,000? Did she really? Said Peter Ilyich, eyeing him dubiously. As soon as the sun rises tomorrow, as soon as Phoebus, ever young, flies upwards, praising and glorifying God, you go to her, this Madame Holokov, and ask her whether she did stump up that 3,000 or not. Try and find out. I don't know on what terms you are, since you say it so positively. I suppose she did give it to you. You've got the money in your hand, but instead of going to Siberia, you're spending it all. Where are you really off to now, eh? to Mokroe, but it's night. Once the lad had all, now the lad has nought, cried Mitcher suddenly. How nought? You say that all those thousands? Say that with all those thousands? I'm not talking about thousands, damn thousands. I'm talking of female character. Fickle is the heart of woman. Treacherous and full of vice, I agree with Ulysses. That's what he says. I don't understand you. Am I drunk? Not drunk, but worse. I am drunk in spirit. Peter Ilyich drunk in spirit. But that's enough. What are you doing? Loading the pistol? I'm loading the pistol. Unfastening the pistol case, Mitcher accidentally opened the powder horn and carefully sprinkled and rammed in the charge. Then he took the bullet and, before inserting it, held it in two fingers in front of the candle. Why are you looking at the bullet? Asked Peter Ilyich, watching him with an uneasy curiosity. Oh, a fancy. Why, if you meant to put that bullet in your brain, would you look at it or not? Why look at it? It's going into my brain, so it's interesting to look at and see what it's like. But that's foolishness, a moment's foolishness. Now, that's done. He added, putting the bullet and driving it home with the ramrod. Peter Ilyich, my dear fellow, that's nonsense, all nonsense. And if only you knew what nonsense. Give me a little piece of paper now. Here's some paper. No, a clean new piece, writing paper, that's right. And taking a pen from the table, Mitcher rapidly wrote two lines, folded the paper in four, and thrust it in his waistcoat pocket. He put the pistols in the case, locked it up, kept it in his hand. Then he looked at Peter Ilyich with a slow, thoughtful smile. Now let's go. Where are we going? No, wait a minute. Are you thinking of putting that bullet in your brain, perhaps? Peter Ilyich asked uneasily. I was foolish about the bullet. I want to live. I love life. You may be sure of that. I love golden-haired Phorbas and his warm light. Dear Peter Ilyich, do you know how to step aside? What do you mean by stepping aside? Making way for a dear creature, and for one I hate, and to let the one I hate become dear. That's what making way means. And to say to them, God bless you, go your way, pass on, while you... That's enough, let's go. Upon my word, I'll tell someone to prevent your going there. Said Peter Ilyich, looking at him. What are you going to Mokroe for now? There's a woman there. A woman, that's enough for you. You shut up. Listen, though you're such a savage, I've always liked you. I feel anxious. Thanks, old fellow. I'm a savage, you say. Savages, savages, that's what I am. Always saying, savages. Why, here's Misha. I was forgetting him. Misha ran in post-haste with a handful of notes in change and reported that everyone was in a bustle at the plot. Nikov's, they're carrying down the bottles and the fish and the tea. It will all be ready directly. Mitcher seized 10 rubles and handed it to Peter Ilyich, then tossed another 10-ruble note to Misha. Don't dare do such a thing, cried Peter Ilyich. I won't have it in my house. It's a bad, demoralizing habit. Put your money away. Here, put it here. Why waste it? It would come in handy tomorrow. And I dare say you'll be coming to me to borrow 10 rubles again. Why do you keep putting the notes in your side pockets? You'll lose them. I say, my dear fellow, let's go to Mokroe together. Why should I go for? I say, let's open a bottle at once and drink to life. I want to drink, and especially to drink with you. I've never drunk with you, have I? Very well, we can go to the metropolis. I was just going there. I haven't time for that. Let's drink at the Plotnikovs, in the back room. Shall I ask you a riddle? Ask away. Mitcher took the piece of paper out of his waistcoat pocket, unfolded it, and showed it in a large, distinct hand was written, I punish myself for my whole life I punish. I will certainly speak to someone, I'll go at once, said Peter Ilyich, after reading the paper. You won't have time, dear boy, come and have a drink, march. Plotnikov's shop was at the corner of the street, next door, but one to Peter Ilyich's. It was the largest grocery shop in our town, and by no means a bad one. Belonging to some rich merchants, they kept everything that could be got in a Petersburg shop. Groceries of all sort, wines bottled by the brothers Elisiev, fruits, cigars, tea, coffee, sugar, so on. There were 3 shop assistants and 2 errand boys always employed. Though our part of the country had grown poorer, the landowners had gone away, and the trade had got worse, yet the grocery stores flourished as before. Every year with increasing prosperity. There were plenty of purchases for their goods. They were awaiting Mitcher with impatience in the shop. They had vivid recollections of how he had bought, 3 or 4 weeks ago, wine and goods of all sorts to the value of 700 rubles, paid for in cash. They would never have let him have anything else, anything on credit, of course. They remembered that then, as now, he had had a bundle of 100-ruble notes in his hand and had scattered them at random, without bargaining, without reflecting or caring to reflect what use so much wine and provisions would be to him. The story was told all over the town that driving off then with Grushenka to Mokroi, he had spent 3,000 in one night and then the following day, and had come back from the spree without a penny. He had picked up a whole troop of gypsies encamped in our neighbourhood at the time, who for 2 days got money without stint out of him while he was drunk, and drank expensive wine without stint. People used to tell, laughing at Mitch's, how he had given champagne to grimy-handed peasants and feasted the village women and girls on sweets and Strasbourg pies, though to laugh at Mitcher to his face was rather a risky proceeding. There was much laughter behind his back, especially in the tavern, at his own ingenuous public avowal that all he had got out of Grushenka by this escapade was permission to kiss her foot, and that was the utmost she had allowed him. By the time Mitcher and Peter Ilyich reached the shop, they found a cart with 3 horses harnessed abreast with bells, and with Audrey the driver ready, waiting for Mitcher at the entrance. In the shop they had almost entirely finished packing 1 box of provisions and were only waiting for Mitch's arrival to nail it down and put it in the cart. Peter Ilyich was astounded. "Where did this cart come from in such a hurry?" he asked Mitcher. "I met Andre as I ran to you and told him to drive straight here to the shop. There's no time to lose. Last time I drove with Timofey, and Timofey now has gone on before me with the witch. Shall we be very late, Andre?" "They'll only get there an hour at most before us, not even that, maybe. I've got Timofey ready to start. I know how he'll go. Their pace won't be ours, Dmitri Fyodorovitch. How could it be? They won't get there an hour earlier." Andre, a lanky, red-haired, middle-aged driver, wearing a full-skirted coat and with a kaftan on his arm, replied warmly. 50 rubles for vodka if we're only an hour behind them. I warrant the time, Dmitri Fyodorovitch. They won't be half an hour before us, let alone an hour." Though Mitcher bustled about seeing after things, he gave his orders strangely, as it were, disconnectedly and inconsecutively. He began a sentence and forgot the end of it. Peter Ilyich found himself obliged to come to the rescue. 400 rubles worth, not less than 400 rubles worth. "Just as it was, then," commanded Mitcher. 4 dozen champagne, not a bottle less. "What do you want with so much? What's it for? Stay," cried Peter Ilyich. "What's this box? What's in it? Surely there isn't 400 rubles worth there." The officious shopman began explaining with oily politeness that the first box contained only 6 bottles of champagne and only the most indispensable articles, such as savouries, sweets, toffee, etc. But the main part of the goods ordered would be packed and sent off, as on the previous occasion, in a special cart, also with 3 horses, travelling at full speed, so that it would arrive not more than an hour later than Dmitri Fyodorovitch himself. "Not more than an hour, not more than an hour, and put in more toffee and fondants. The girls there are so fond of it," Mitcher insisted hotly. "The fondants are all right, but what do you want with 4 dozen of champagne?" "One would be enough," said Peter Ilyich, almost angry. He began bargaining, asking for a bill of the goods, and refused to be satisfied, but he only succeeded in saving 100 rubles. In the end, it was agreed that only 300 rubles worth should be sent. "Well, you may go to the devil," cried Peter Ilyich, on second thoughts. "What's it to do with me? Throw away your money, since it's cost you nothing." "This way, my economist, this way. Don't be angry." Mitcher drew him into a room at the back of the shop. "They'll give us a bottle here directly. We'll taste it. Ek, Peter Ilyich, come along with me, for you're a nice fellow, the sort I like." Mitcher sat down on a wicker chair before a little table covered with a dirty dinner napkin. Peter Ilyich sat down opposite, and the champagne soon appeared, and oysters were suggested to the gentleman. First-class oysters, the last lot in. Hang the oysters, I don't eat them. And we don't need anything, cried Peter Ilyich, almost angrily. There's no time for oysters, said Mitya. I'm not hungry. Do you know, friend, he said suddenly, with feeling, I never have liked all this disorder. Who does like it? 3 dozen of champagne for peasants. Upon my word, that's enough to make anyone angry. That's not what I mean. I'm talking about a higher order. There's no order in me, no higher order, but that's all over. There's no need to grieve about it. It's too late, damn it. My whole life has been disorder, and one must set it in order. Is that a pun, eh? You're raving, not making puns. Glory be to God in heaven. Glory be to God in me. That verse came from my heart. It's not a verse, but a tear. I made it myself. Not while I was pulling the captain's beard, though. Why do you bring him in all of a sudden? Why do I bring him in? Foolery. All things come to an end. All things are made equal. That's the long and short of it. You know I keep thinking of your pistols. That's all foolery, too. Drink and don't be fanciful. I love life. I've loved life too much, shamefully much. Enough. Let's drink to life, dear boy. I propose the toast. Why am I pleased with myself? I'm a scoundrel, but I'm satisfied with myself, and yet I'm tortured by the thought that a scoundrel, but satisfied with myself. I bless the creation. I'm ready to bless God and his creation directly, but I must kill one noxious insect for fear it should crawl and spoil life for others. Let us drink to life, dear brother. What can be more precious than life? Nothing. To life, and to one queen of queens. Let's drink to life, and to your queen, too, if you like. They drank a glass each, although Mitya was excited and expansive, yet he was melancholy, too. It was as though some heavy, overwhelming anxiety were weighing upon him. Misha, here's your Misha. Come. Misha, come here, my boy. Drink this glass to Phoebus, the golden-haired of tomorrow morn. What are you giving it of him for? Cried Peter Ilyich irritably. Yes, 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 let me. I want to. Eek! Misha emptied the glass and bowed and ran out. He'll remember it afterwards, Mitya remarked. Woman. Women. I love women. What is woman? A queen of creation. My heart is sad. My heart is sad, Peter Ilyich. Do you remember Hamlet? I'm very sorry. Good Horatio, alas, poor Yorick. Perhaps that's me, Yorick. Yes, I'm Yorick now, had a skull afterwards. Peter Ilyich listened in silence. Mitya, too, was silent for a while. What dogs that you've got here? He asked the shopman, casually noticing a pretty little lapdog with dark eyes sitting in the corner. It belongs to Varvara Alexeyevna, the mistress, answered the clerk. She brought it and forgot it here. It must be taken back to her. I saw one like it in the regiment, murmured Mitya. Dreamily, only that one had its hind leg broken. By the way, poor Peter Ilyich, I wanted to ask you, have you ever stolen anything in your life? What a question. Oh, I didn't mean anything. From somebody's pocket, you know. I don't mean government money. Everyone steals that, and no doubt you do too. You go to the devil. I'm talking of other people's money. Stealing straight out of a pocket. Out of a purse, eh? I stole 20 kopecks from my mother when I was 9 years old. I took it off the table on the sly and held it in my tight hand. Held it tight in my hand. Well, and what happened? Oh, nothing. I kept it 3 days. Then I felt ashamed, confessed, and gave it back. And then what? Naturally, I was whipped. But why do you ask? Have you stolen something? I have, said Mitya, winking slyly. What have you stolen? Inquired Peter Ilyich curiously. I stole 20 kopecks from my mother when I was 9 years old and gave it back 3 days later. As he said this, Mitya suddenly got up. Dmitri Fyodorovich, won't you come now? Called Andrei from the door of the shop. Are you ready? We'll come, Mitya started. A few more last words, and Andrei, a glass of vodka at starting. Give him some brandy as well. That box, the one with the pistols, put under my seat. Goodbye, Peter Ilyich. Don't remember evil against me. But you're coming back tomorrow. Will you settle that little bill now? Cried the clerk, springing forward. Oh, yes, the bill, of course. He pulled the bundles of notes out of his pocket again, picked out 300 rubles, threw them on the counter, and ran hurriedly out of the shop. Everyone followed him, bowing and wishing him good luck. Andre, coughing from his brandy he had just swallowed, jumped up on the box, but Mitcher was only just taking his seat when suddenly, to his surprise, he saw Fenya before him. She ran up, panting, clasped a hand before him with a cry, and plumped down at his feet. Dmitri Fyodorovich, dear good Dmitri Fyodorovich, don't harm my mistress, and it was I told you all about it, and don't murder him. He came first, he's hers. He'll marry Agrafena Alexandrovna now. That's why he's come back from Siberia, Dmitri Fyodorovich, dear. Don't take a fellow creature's life. Tut, 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 that's it, is it? So you're off there to make trouble, muttered Peter Ilyich. Now it's all clear as daylight. Dmitri Fyodorovich, give me your pistols at once, if you mean to behave like a man, he shouted aloud at Mitya. Do you hear, Dmitri? The pistols? Wait a bit, brother. I'll throw them into the pool on the road, answered Mitya. Fenya, get up. Don't kneel to me. Mitya won't hurt anyone. The silly fool won't hurt anyone again. But I say, Fenya, he shouted after having taken his seat. I hurt you just now, so forgive me and have pity on me. Forgive a scoundrel. But it doesn't matter if you don't. It's all the same now. Now then, Andre, look alive. Fly along full speed. Andre whipped up the horses and the bells began ringing. Goodbye, Peter Ilyich. My last tear is for you. He's not drunk, but he keeps babbling like a lunatic, Peter Ilyich thought as he watched him go. He had half a mind to stay and see the cart packed with the remaining wines and provisions, knowing that they would deceive and fraud Mitya. But suddenly, feeling vexed with himself, he turned away with a curse and went to the tavern to play billiards. He's a fool, though he's a good fellow, he muttered as he went. I've heard of that officer, Grushenka's former flame. Well, if he has turned up, eek, those pistols, damn it all. I'm not his nurse. Let them do what they like. Besides, it's all come to nothing. They're a set of brawlers, that's all. They'll drink and fight and make friends again. They're not men who do anything real. What does he mean by I'm stepping aside, I'm punishing myself? It'll come to nothing. He's shouted such phrases 1,000 times, drunk in the taverns, but now he's not drunk, drunk in spirit. They are fond of the fine phrases, the villains. Am I his nurse? He must have been fighting. His face was all over blood. With whom, though? I shall find out at the metropolis, and his handkerchief was soaked in blood. It's still living on my floor. Hang it. He reached the tavern in a bad humour, and at once made up a game. The game cheered him. He played a second game and suddenly began telling one of his partners that Dmitri Karamazov had come in for some cash again, something like 3,000 rubles, and had gone to Mokroe again to spend it with Grushenka. This news roused singular interest in his listeners. They all spoke of it, not laughing, but with a strange gravity. They left off playing. 3,000? But where can he have got 3,000? Questions were asked. The story of Madame Holokov's present was received with scepticism. Hasn't he robbed his old father? That's the question. 3,000. There's something odd about it. He boasted aloud that he would kill his father. We all heard him. Here, and it was 3,000 he talked about. Peter Ilyich listened. All at once he became short and dry in his answers. He said not a word about the blood on Mitch's face and hands, though he had meant to speak of it at first. They began a third game, and by degrees the talk about Mitch had died away. But by the end of the third game, Peter Ilyich felt no more desire for billiards. He laid down the cue, and without having supper, as he had intended, he walked out of the tavern. When he reached the marketplace, he stood still in perplexity, wondering at himself. He realized that what he wanted was to go to Fyodor Pavlovich's and find out if anything had happened there. On account of some stupid nonsense, as it's sure to turn out, am I going to wake up the household and make a scandal? Foo! Damn it! Is it my business to look after them? In a very bad humor, he went straight home and suddenly remembered Fenya. Damn it all. I ought to have questioned her just now, he thought with vexation. I should have heard everything. And the desire to speak to her and so find out became so pressing and importunate that when he was halfway home he turned abruptly and went towards the house where Grushenka lodged. Going up to the gate he knocked. The sound of the knock in the silence of the night sobered him and made him feel annoyed, and no one answered him. Everyone in the house was asleep. "And I shall be making a fuss," he thought, with a feeling of positive discomfort. But instead of going away altogether, he fell to knocking again with all his might, filling the street with clamour. "Not coming? Well, I will knock them up. I will," he muttered at each knock, fuming at himself, but at the same time he redoubled his knocks on the gate. All right, there we go. Another chapter down. Very cool. All right, go over to the subreddit if you would like to have your say about this chapter. Other than that, that's going to do us for tonight. Thank you very much for listening, and I will see you tomorrow.